Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Small business owner, you're special among Americans. You are a latter-day pioneer of our society and truly one of America's heroes.
Welcome back, heroes. It's 13 after. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate your business. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Roger Volcom is our guest. He's our good friend and associate professor of management at American University and a private consultant to business and government. He is the author of The Negotiation Toolkit, and he's our friend. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back with us and continuing our series on how to help people be better negotiators. And we've talked about a lot of different things over the last several weeks. And today, one of the things I know that you've got on your mind is now that we've been doing all this negotiating, we've come all the way down this road with these people that we're buying or selling to, and now, you know, as the old saying goes, nothing's finished until the paperwork's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to get something down on paper. Talk to us about the agreements. And I use the term paper actually could be metaphorically, right?
Pardon me?
When I say paper, it might not be on paper.
That's right.
The agreement might not be on paper.
You know, last time, Jim, we were talking about international negotiations,
yeah.
And in a lot of countries, it's the relationship that really binds the agreement. And so in many other countries of the world, you're expected to spend a lot of time up front wining and dining and getting to know the individual, the company that they represent, and so forth.
And as we said, when he says a lot of time, last week we reminded people that could be years.
It could be,
in some places.
And so it's really, in many cultures, it's not the piece of paper, but it's the relationship that binds things.
You mean like it used to be in America?
Maybe so, yeah. And you try to deal with the person, many folks from other countries try to deal with the person at the top of the organization because they know if something goes amiss,
mm-hmm.
that they can go back to this friend and say, look, I think this was our understanding, and they know the friend will have the power to rectify it.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's actually a negotiating, I've seen that used as a negotiating tactic here in the United States. I've known CEOs who would not do the negotiating
right.
in the early stages because they wanted to be able to bail out one way or the other if it came down to it. They could always say, well, that guy didn't know what he was talking about, or I'm sorry he offended you, I'll fix this, or I'm sorry he didn't have the authority to do that.
Right.
There's always, and so your point is an excellent one, and that is to make sure that you're dealing where the buck stops if you can.
Right. But I think in the United States, there's also a lot of decentralization of power, so we often give people at the middle levels and lower levels more authority to do these sorts of things, but it does allow that sort of fail-safe mechanism there, mm-hmm. that I can say, well, you know, I didn't say that.
Right. And what are, from an agreement standpoint, what are some of the, and let's get into, let's talk just about the agreements for a minute, and then let's get into the written contracts. What are some of the different regional things from an agreement standpoint? The differences regionally.
You mean around
in the country? I mean in the world.
In the world?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a lot of countries, and it sort of depends on the who you're dealing with and what the negotiation is ultimately going to be about, what products or services are the focus. But in a lot of cases, it's just a handshake or sort of an outline of what's going to be taking place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so detailed as we might have here in the United States. Now, this is changing to some extent because the United States dictates a lot of kind of the formal, informal rules of commerce. But in general, in a lot of countries around the world, in Latin America, for example, Latin American countries, in the Middle East, it's a more informal process.
Well, you know, if you think about it, a contract is only as good as your ability to enforce it.
Yeah.
And if you are in a country where the person you're doing business with is from that country, you may be a little bit of a disadvantage to enforce that written contract.
Well, you're making an important point that also this has to do with the legal system of the country. The United States is a very intricate and powerful legal system, and so we use that as a basis for determining who's right and who's wrong if some disagreement comes up later on.
Right.
So and in many other countries, the legal system isn't as sound or powerful, and it may take many, many years, and maybe some corruption involved in the legal system, and so you can't rely on that. And that's where the friendship really is what has to hold things together.
Yeah, if your negotiations are not based on, if the result of your negotiation is not based on this relationship, the paper that you're writing this down on may not be worth anything.
Yeah, but in this country, we sort of, Sam Goldwyn, Metro Goldwyn Mayer once apparently said, a verbal contract isn't worth the paper it's written on. And so that's sort of the attitude, I think, of most of us in this country, that it needs to be done on paper.
But now in America, that's the thing that we always say, get it in writing or it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. And that's, again, because of the legal system.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the legal system. Because we have, as you say, a very strong legal system. But it's also, unfortunately, because it seems that, and I hate to sound negative, but it seems that more and more people don't deal in good faith as much as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you agree with me or not on that.
Well, that may be. Just to give you another example, I have a good friend who is a college professor, teaches finance, and he taught here in the United States for several years, but he's Brazilian, and he decided to go back to his home country. And he had quite an operation that he was moving into. He was going to be the head of a center and so forth, but there was nothing written down on paper. Nothing. He said, Roger, this would drive you nuts, because it's all sort of based on faith and the relationships that he had formed with the people there. So,
well, as we said, I mean, he could have had a 29-page document, and if those people had wanted to end it, they probably could have.
Maybe
and it wouldn't have been anything. Probably wouldn't have been much more that they could have done about it.
Maybe so. Again, because it could be based on relationships that they had with other people, including in the legal system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let's talk about the written agreements. Let's move over into that. Now, let's presume that you know, I tell people that I do business with that I like very much and I admire them very much. I say, let's get it in writing for no other reason but that when this thing has to be defended, you and I aren't even here.
Right.
Let's make sure that our heirs don't have to fight this out because we were vague about how this agreement was supposed to be developed.
Well, I think in general, Jim, you want to be in control of the negotiation. So I don't think you necessarily want to begin the agreement writing at the end of the process. You want to be taking some notes all throughout the process.
That's a good point, and let's finish that up when we come back. Folks, after these messages, Roger, stand by. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Roger Volcom, and we're talking about negotiating, specifically the agreements that result from your negotiating. 888-822-8255, or send us an email. Thank you for joining me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my email address is jim@smallbusinessadvocate.com. If you would like to send me an email question for me and my guest, Roger Volcoma, we're talking about negotiations, jim@smallbusinessadvocate.com, which is also my website, the last part of me. Roger, we're talking about negotiating. We're specifically talking about now about the agreements. Now we're into written agreements, and you made a very good point just as we were taking a break. Would you say that again, please?
Well, I was saying, Jim, that you probably don't want to suddenly be jumping into writing down some things at the conclusion of your talks, but that you want to be taking control all throughout the process, though it's very natural for you to be the one to write up the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're the one that's writing it up, you can put it in words that you're comfortable with. Sometimes organizations have what are called boilerplates. This is a kind of a form agreement that we use in most cases. And generally those things are written in legalese, and they kind of favor the person that is suggesting we use this boilerplate. And if it's your boilerplate, that's great, but if it's somebody else's, there may be some subtleties in there you don't realize. So.
Well, one of the things that you said, though, that I want to make sure we didn't miss is you said don't wait till the end of the negotiations to start developing the documents.
Right. You can be taking notes and saying, let's see if we got this done here, and I've got these 3 points. These are 3 things you're looking for. And so you're basically controlling the flow of the negotiation, and it's sort of natural for you to be the one to write it up.
Right. And so what you want to do early on, especially if this is a process, and a lot of negotiations are in a process rather than an event. For example, if you're buying a piece of real estate or a business or some major asset or something like that, or if you're negotiating for a job or something, or in negotiating to hire someone, you want to say, okay, what I'm going to do while we're having our talks here, our discussions, I'm going to be taking notes on what we agree on,
exactly.
And then I'll give those to you and let you make sure that you and I agree on that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And another thing, and this is a big deal in the area of buying a business, and you could use it for just about anything, and that's basically a letter of intent.
Right.
That you want to get going as early as possible, as soon as you had enough discussion that you feel like you're talking to the group or the person that you think you're going to do business with. You need to get a letter of intent going, don't you?
Right. It's sort of an interim agreement. This is sort of what we're both talked about. This is what my intentions are. This is what we're planning to do.
Uh-huh. And that letter of intent, well, it does one more thing that's really important. Remember I said you both decided that these are the people that are going to put this thing together on both sides of the table. You also are saying two things. Number one, the next level of negotiation is going to involve some expense. That's one. And number two, I'm signing this agreement to let you know that this letter of intent, to let you know that I will forsake other offers until we go down this to a certain point.
It shows you're serious.
Yes.
You're looking for a partnership.
Because the last thing in the world you want is to get into the due diligence phase of the negotiation and find out that the person that you're dealing with is courting someone else on the side, so
right.
to speak, and then all of a sudden they pull the rug out on you while you just spent a few thousand dollars.
Right. Well, this is why it's important to have BATNAs or alternatives, best alternatives to a negotiated agreement, to have alternatives. Because if you do sort of commit yourself to one individual totally and they pull out the rug for some reason because you haven't written such a letter, then you could be left without a contract, without a deal.
Right, yeah. How would you say, what language would you use to gain control of the agreement process?
I think just, I think you wouldn't have to say anything at all. You could
just start doing it?
Just start taking some notes. You might say, look, let me write some of this stuff down and make sure I've got the points that we're talking about.
Just sort of become the scribe of the meetings.
Exactly.
Yeah, and don't even make a big deal out of it.
Exactly.
Because, and here's what will happen. Instinctively, other people will like that because they don't have to do it. And they won't realize that basically what you've done by taking this, I mean, nobody wants to be the secretary of any organization. I don't know anybody who likes taking notes.
I wrote a paper once called, Jim, Power Behind the Pen. And there really is a lot of power as the scribe or the note taker. People don't realize that.
And so you become the scribe of these meetings or bring somebody with you to do that. In fact, you could say, you know, I'm bringing in my associate here, and his or her sole purpose in life for these meetings is to write down what we say.
That allows you to focus on details and nonverbals while they're taking care of writing that down.
But you got to agree to share that information as you go along.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But you can share it, you know, you get it first, they get it second.
It's a partnership, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back with Roger Volkman. We're talking about negotiating. We are back. It's 33 after. Thank you for being here. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Roger Volkma, the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. Roger, where is this book available?
Jim, it's you can find it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and it's in most bookstores.
Okay, good. Thank you very much for that. And, folks, I recommend you check it out. A lot of great stuff in here, and it's very easy to read. Very well written for a layperson to get a lot out of, and even if you're a hardcore professional negotiator, there's a lot of good stuff in here that will help you to remind yourself of. Some of it you may already know, but I've been negotiating a long time, and I've gotten a lot out of your book, Roger.
Good. Thanks, Jim.
Speaking of, we're talking about written agreements, and we're just about ready to leave that subject and move on, but before we do, one last thing I wanted to say about letters of intent, LOI, and that is that the letter of intent is not your contracting to do the deal.
Right.
You're not saying, I'm doing this. You're saying, basically all you're saying is, we're going to allow you to have a 2-week or a 30-day or a 60-day or a 10-year, whatever, period. We're going to set this aside for due diligence. to find out, for you to spend some money to find out, to make sure that you know what you're buying, if that's what it takes. And during that period that we set out, I will forsake all other offers.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that I will buy, absolutely buy, or it doesn't mean that I will absolutely sell.
Right. It's an interim period of good faith.
Yep.
Where it allows folks to do some data gathering and so forth.
What are some final thoughts of yours on written agreements?
Well, Jim, one thing you ought to do, if it's a negotiation that matters at all to you, is to have somebody look it over. Have them look at the language, have them look at making sure that things are consistent with the laws of the land, if it's an international agreement.
Yep.
If there's potential for disagreement at some point, sometimes they put clauses in the agreement that say, in case we have some disagreement, we will go to arbitration or mediation, something of that sort. But you need somebody, a lawyer, generally speaking, to take a look at it to make sure that it's going to stand up.
When I take a contract, or when I have an attorney help me with a contract, I tell them, I want you to know that if this goes wrong, you're going to be the one to defend this.
Yeah.
So make sure that you write like you want to. Now, speaking of lawyers, though, one of the things that I don't do, and you and I may disagree on this, I'm not sure, but I don't bring the lawyers in until it's time to really work on the contract document. I don't, let me put it this way, they may be involved behind the scenes, but I do not let them sit at the table in the early stages of the negotiation.
Yeah, in international negotiations, that can be critical because it can offend the other party. It suggests that you don't trust them, for example, that you have to have your lawyer or attorney here.
Well,
I know they come in at the end.
I've got a lot of good friends who are attorneys. I have a number of attorneys who are on the show, who are regulars on the show. But I'm telling you, in a negotiation, an attorney, 99 out of 100 attorneys are deal killers sitting at the negotiation table.
But so having somebody look it over, make sure it's specific, make sure the document is contract is consistent with other documents and so forth, and follows letters of the law and all of that is really important.
Yep. But as we said, you've got to be able to defend. If you're not going to be prepared to defend a document, don't write it up.
Right. Or you better have a pretty good relationship with the person you have
exactly
to agree
right.
with.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, we're ready to move over?
Yes.
Let's talk about what do we do about people who are unnaturals? I use the term natural in the first part of the hour before you got here, Roger. I said, you know, if you're a natural negotiator, congratulations. But some people are unnatural negotiators.
There are. I mean, after going through all of this, you may discover that you're just not very good at the face-to-face, fast-paced kind of stuff.
You're not cut out for it for whatever reason. Maybe you don't like people. You know, you're the kind of person who can't come across. I mean, there's something about this. I mean, I know people, and you do too, Roger, who are key members of an organization, and they couldn't any more manage that business than a man in the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to come across, and they're what we call the hunters. They can make that deal happen.
Right.
They can't fulfill it. We have to hire other people to fulfill it, but they've got to come across to negotiate that deal.
So what do you do? Because life is negotiations. You have to be able to negotiate, and certainly in business.
Yep.
So this chapter talks about 7 things you can do if you are not a natural negotiator.
What's the first one?
The first one is to scout your opponent or the other party. The more you know about his or her style, his or her situation, how badly they need a deal, etc., the better off you are.
Educate yourself.
Exactly. You can do this on the internet. You can do this through newspaper articles. You can do it by walking around the neighborhood if you're thinking of buying property to see what other properties look like, what kind of occupancy they have.
Instead of MBWA, management by walking around, you're recommending NBWA,
exactly.
Negotiating by walking around.
I had somebody who was terminating employment with an organization. She contacted somebody else who had done that the year before and said, how is the boss going to handle this? And the friend said, well, he's going to demand one thing. I don't know what it's going to be, but he's going to go to the carpet on one thing. He'll let you have everything else. So knowing his style, her boss's style, then she negotiated a tremendous deal for herself because she quickly discovered what he was going to absolutely have to have and kind of gave him that and got everything else.
I wanted to buy a business once. I didn't know the person very well at all that I wanted to buy the business from, and I contacted a mutual friend, and I said, look, I don't want you to divulge any confidences or anything, but just tell me about the person that I'm going to be dealing with.
Right.
What is he like? What is he not like? You know, what would I do that would make him angry, and what could I do that make this deal happen? And
right.
He told me a few things, and it made all the difference.
Got the other party.
Yeah, good point. 39 after, Roger, we've got to take a break. Folks, we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. We are back, 44 after. Thank you for your business. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Roger, I know you do a lot of, by the way, Roger Volcom, folks, is our guest and our good friend. Roger, I know you do a lot of seminars around the country, actually around the world. Can you take a half a minute and tell us quickly about some of the things that you have available?
Well, I'm going to be doing some work in Madison, Wisconsin with some other folks at the Management Institute. It's negotiating it in a world markets program.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of training in South America, in Chile and Brazil. Generally, it's for executive MBAs and MBA students.
Mm-hmm.
And offer courses in negotiation here in Washington area as well.
Okay, so if someone wanted to contact you to get you to come to their organization and...
They can reach me at Volkema, V-O-L-K-E-M-A, at American.edu.
Okay, say that again.
Volkema, V-O-L-K-E-M-A, at American.edu.
Okay, and if you needed to contact Roger and you miss any of that, you know you can contact me and ask me that question, and I will be glad to forward that information. Okay, Roger, we're talking about... In this part of the hour, we're talking about the unnatural negotiator. What can we do to help the person who has determined that they are not the best negotiator in the world and probably are not going to be?
Right. First thing is to scout your opponent or the other party. Second thing is to have alternatives. Have what's called a best alternative to a negotiated agreement. If you know that if you can't get this deal, you can get another deal that's almost as good, you're going to be a lot more confident going into that negotiation.
Salespeople know that as this term that I learned many, many years ago. One prospect is no prospect.
Right. You need to have confidence going into the negotiation. If you're not natural, you need to have fallbacks. And so the status quo sometimes can serve as that, but if it doesn't, you need to have something else that will serve as your fallback.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you need to do is to consider the time and the place.
Let me back up just a minute.
Sure.
I want to encourage you to imagine this emotion. Without a BATNA, without a backup alternative, imagine that you're working on this negotiation and imagine the feeling that you're going to have when that person does one of two things that you're negotiating with. They say, the deal's off, or they make you an ultimatum that you really just can't live with.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to feel with no alternative at that point? You're either going to lose the whole deal or have to take it on terms that you did not want.
Right.
And which may change your whole life. I mean, I've seen that happen before. So what you want to do, if you say, well, I don't want to work hard enough to try to find an alternative, imagine how you're going to feel when that happens, because you and I both know, Roger, and probably 6 to 7 out of 10 times, you're going to be faced with a really tough negotiator who's going to put you in that position where if you don't have a backup, you're going to feel pretty sick to your stomach.
And they may know something about your situation. They may have scouted you.
Yeah.
Or they may be very good at the face-to-face stuff and can quickly figure out that this is the only deal you've got.
This reminds me, I'm trying to get this emotion across there, Roger, because it reminds me of when I was flying, when I was learning to fly airplanes before I had my instrument rating, my instructor said, if you ever think you want to go flying in conditions that you're not qualified for, he said, imagine this. He said, would you rather be up there wishing you were on the ground or on the ground wishing you were up there? You know? And so he made me sort of be able to feel that sick emotion that I would have, and that I did have it a few times, by the way.
Well,
anyway,
it's okay, like jumping out of an airplane with a parachute and you don't have the safety chute or something of that sort.
That's right. Well, I've done that with the safety chute, but not without the safety chute. Let's move on.
Okay, time and place. Think about the time and place where the negotiation is occurring. You would like it to be in a place that you're familiar with, you're comfortable with, if at all possible, as opposed to a place that is the other individual's office, where they have all the resources at their disposal. There's a story about Herb Cohen, who was the head of Columbia Pictures, who had an office in which his chair was actually elevated.
Yeah.
And he sort of sat down, sat looking down at you. You don't want to be in that kind of situation. So
it's all part of what Robert Ringer used to call winning through intimidation.
In that case, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Fourth thing is to think about the medium. You know, what if I'm not good at the face-to-face stuff, can I use emails or faxes?
Hmm.
Or can I leave messages on the telephone? You know, one of the advantages of sending email messages is you can write the message and set it aside and come back and look at it or have somebody else look at it. One of the advantages of calling and leaving a voicemail message is that you can have some notes there, sort of guide your message.
If the person intimidates you physically,
mm-hmm.
if you're a lady and you know that whenever you meet with this person, there's always two or three men sitting there, and you, I don't think you should be intimidated, but Roger, the reality is I have talked to women who say that they are intimidated by a situation like that. Maybe your better bet is to use the telephone, or the email.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fifth thing is to establish limits. You know, if you're going into a negotiation, you don't necessarily have to close the deal that day. Use authority limits. Say, I'm going to check with my boss or my wife or whoever. I'm going to set financial limits. I'm not going to go above or below this. And that'll sort of provide some guidance for you.
What you probably ought to do, and when you set those limits, for some reason you always get to those limits. Whatever limits you set, you get there pretty quickly. So
yeah.
So say to yourself, okay, I'm going to set this limit, absolute limit, and I'm not going to go any more than 5% over it.
Well, you may want to have somebody with you to enforce those.
That's
limits.
Right, to drag you out of the room kicking and screaming. Stand by, Roger. We're going to take a break. Folks, we'll be back to talk about some more things that you can do if you are an unnatural negotiator. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Roger Volcom is our guest. His book is The Negotiation Toolkit. Stay with us. 54 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our friend Roger Volcom, the author of The Negotiation Toolkit. Roger, there are a number of links, of examples of links to websites in your book, aren't there, to some very important sites.
There are a number of websites in there that you can link into, and I'll show you samples, some sample contracts or agreements.
Okay, good. Sounds good. And you've also got a list of some videos and a lot of different things that are some great resources, and I appreciate you making some of those available. Okay, let's wrap up talking about some things that unnatural negotiators can do.
Okay, a couple more. One is to rehearse. If you're not very confident in the face-to-face kind of stuff, maybe you need to practice, and that could be... could involve going to one business to explore making a purchase before you go to the place where you think it is that you're actually going to make the purchase.
Yeah.
Which also might help you to develop this patent or this alternative. You
mm-hmm.
may know someplace else that offers this product or this service or whatever at a comparable price.
Yeah, you know, the rehearsing, if it's a big deal, you could do it in front of someone else.
Exactly.
Let them role play with you.
Sure. The last one is to consider using an agent. You know, if you're really not good at the face-to-face stuff and it's that important, get somebody in there that is. If you're negotiating internationally, often it's a good idea to have somebody on your team at least who, if not from the other culture, has a pretty good understanding of the other culture so you can avoid those faux pas, those embarrassing mistakes that sometimes happen when we overseas and try to negotiate deals.
Well, and make sure that when you hire that agent, that agent knows what their role is.
Right.
Their role is to represent you, not to have their own agenda.
Right.
And
right.
That's what you get into with attorneys sometimes.
Well, this is a negotiation within a negotiation.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Agent. Yeah.
Good point. Excellent point. Yeah.
Clearly, if you've worked with somebody before or if they come recommended with by another company, then that's a good agent to go with.
Robert Ringer used to say when the person he was negotiating with would have their attorney, he said the attorney would start out saying, "My client wants this." And he said then he would say, he would move to, "We want this." And then the guy's attorney would, he said, whenever the attorney got to where he said, "I want this," he said, that was my cue to get up and leave the room. He said, I literally left the negotiation until the attorney was saying, "My client wants this again."
One of the advantages of an agent is that sometimes they can say things that if you were to say them, it would create bad feelings.
Good point.
And you can always say, well, that was the agent, and it was
right.
He or she wasn't authorized to say that.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the BATNA thing,
uh-huh.
Best alternative. if you find yourself in a situation where you just didn't have an alternative, and you found yourself in that situation where you were pushed up against the wall, or you were disappointed in what the other person gave you, I want to give them a fallback BATNA that everybody can have, and that's this: there's a new bus coming by every 10 minutes. There's got to be something better than this.
Right.
And if it's not a good deal today, if it's a good deal today, it'll be a good deal tomorrow. Just get up and walk away.
The status quo can be your BATNA. So you can just say, well, just not what I'm looking for. So walk away. And don't be surprised if you get a call from this person a day or 2 days or whatever.
You'll never know how good a deal you'll get on something until you're prepared to walk away from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Roger, we got to wrap it up for this hour. As always, you did a great job. Next time you're with us, we're going to talk about ethics, right?
Okay, Jim.
Thanks, Roger. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Roger Volkman, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.